You're listening to an Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode.
He's a smart one, isn't he? What are you gonna name him?
Do they look like just apes to you?
He saved our lives.
He was remarkable.
Apes, apes, together, strong!
You're him. You're Caesar. We've been searching for you for so long.
I do not start this war. I fight only to protect apes.
Human gets sick. Ape gets smart. Then human kill ape. But not me. I run.
There are times when it is necessary to abandon our humanity, to save humanity.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this very special Epic Film Guys review minisode for War for the Planet of the Apes. I am, of course, Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I am Epic Film Guy, J-U-S-T-I-N. I'm spelling out my name just to make sure you all know how to spell it. Justin.
I'm going to call you Justin, like without the I. Just apostrophe N. Justin.
My grandfather called me Justine a lot when I was a kid as a joke, and he didn't think it would hurt my feelings, but it kind of did, maybe a little bit. I don't know. Possibly.
And that's what I do. I laugh at your pain. Oh, well, yes, Justin, we are here to discuss one of the most anticipated films for both of us, definitely my number one of the year.
War for the Planet of the Apes hit theaters last weekend. It is the third film in what would be the modern trilogy of the Apes films, Planet of the Apes, which is obviously a very classic film, which we talked about the reboot with Paul, which was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And in this case, we both, Nick and I, have been heavily anticipating this film. What this film is about is after the apes suffer unimaginable losses, Caesar wrestles with his darker instincts and begins his own mythic quest to avenge his kind. I don't really know if that cat really captures what the movie's about. Kind of, I guess, possibly.
A little bit, maybe?
A little? Mm. I don't know. Who writes this shit on IMDb anyways?
Seriously. I have no idea.
I saw the film early. You hated me for it. You sent me a death threat or a hope for me to have death because I saw it early.
Stop seeing movies early and then you wouldn't have these problems, would you? Nope.
And like I said, the coolest thing about that whole thing was I've been to quite a few screenings, early screenings, since I moved down here to good old Virginia outside of Washington, D.C., but I never saw like huge security guards. Like, and four of them, these big, huge, giant black dudes that just look so tough. They all had shaved heads, too. Like, I was like, okay, it's like a clique or something, like a gang, or what's going on here? They all had the same patch on their jacket. And they're just like, oh, we're here for the screening, the ape screening. And I'm like, damn. And I sent you the picture, you know, as I talked about on the previous show last week, you know, the 20th Century Fox sign they had right before you walked in the theater, like, you know, basically warning you, like, don't fuck this shit up or you're getting your ass kicked out. And luckily it's in an Alamo draft house, so they already have a strict no phone policy anyway. But yes, I got to see the movie 3 days before it came out in theaters, so I had to keep mum. I tried to, for your sake, even though I probably ruined it a little bit. But I'm going to throw it your way. For your first, Nick, because I don't know what you think of the movie. I haven't heard anything. We haven't talked about this. Your first initial thoughts to me about War for the Planet of the Apes.
All right. Well, I'll kick proceedings off here with a huge, huge shout out to my boy Brentley. I saw him over the weekend for the wedding that I attended, and he actually picked me up this bad boy. I'm actually showing it off on the Skype cam right now to make Justin super jelly.
I hate you. I want that so bad.
Yeah, it's one of the posters from the triple feature that AMC did where they played Rise, Dawn, and War all in 3D, of course, which... Bleh.
Yeah, never mind. I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that, but awesome still nonetheless.
Though. Yeah, he's still... I mean, it's just on the back. It has just the little window, the carving of the window, and the names of the three films, and then on the front... It has Caesar on his horse.
That's amazing, Nick. I got to tell you something special for your birthday. Maybe heading your way. I may be unveiling something on our Facebook page shortly here in the next couple of days. Just prepare yourself because I think it's pretty cool. I just been playing around with something simple, and I'm gonna throw something together for you. So,
well, I appreciate that. That's very nice of you.
Yeah, man.
All right, but yeah, let's I guess dive right into it. I'll say right off the bat, just to not really leave you hanging in suspense here, I didn't enjoy this movie as much as I love Dawn. And that may have some, it may have carried some of those expectations from Dawn. They may have been a little bit too high going into the film. But, I mean, I've had unchecked expectations before and still had them met or exceeded. And I still love so much about this movie. This will definitely be a recommendation for me at the end of the day. But overall, I just think it lags at times where I don't feel Dawn did at all. And I mean, it kind of, if I had to put it on a footing, I would say it's almost equal with Rise. Like, I don't think it's a worse film than Rise, but I don't necessarily think it's better either. And I've got a few different negatives for the film that we'll get into eventually. But yeah, that's where I'm coming from. I mean, I still really, really, really had a good time with this, and we'll definitely get into that. But yeah, overall, didn't really blow me away the way I was really hoping it would. Some parts of it did, but overall, no.
I can relate to that, but on the other hand, I also don't necessarily relate to that. The quote that I came up with after I saw this movie, I felt it was even more impacted on my second viewing, was the best third film in a trilogy of all time. And that's my personal opinion. You can disagree with that all you'd like. For me personally, and how attached I am to this character of Caesar, and this being a character piece for Caesar, I walked away feeling completely satisfied. I still will go out on record and say I still like Dawn more. Obviously that's a movie. It is the second movie in a trilogy. And it is a very strong movie, as we talked about on our Apes retrospective with Paul from The Countdown. I don't think anything could necessarily touch Dawn or be better than it, because it's very rare that a third film can be better than the second film. But for me, I walked out of this movie completely blown away by it. I think that it did everything that I was hoping it would do for the character of Caesar. And we're going to get into spoilers. We're just going to jump right in. So if you haven't seen the film, if you're worried about it being spoiled for you, if you're worried about it, come back and listen to this mini-sode after you've seen the movie. Or if you don't give a shit about spoilers, just listen right through, because we're gonna dig in deep to the nitty-gritty for War for the Planet of the Apes. But for me, I mean, I was going into this hoping that it was not going to be a war film necessarily. I think that we are talking about this quite a bit on the podcast leading up to actually seeing the film. That title, War for the Planet of the Apes, it sounds a little bit confusing. It sounds a little bit wordy. But after watching the movie, I totally understood what the title means. It's not a war of the apes with the humans. It's the humans fighting each other and fighting themselves and dealing with the idea that they're going to be gone. It's already the Planet of the Apes. They already are going to be the ones that are going to be the victor. They're going to be the ones that nature has selected to be on this planet. The humans are already in the background. They're no longer at the forefront. So War for the Planet of the Apes finally made sense to me after watching this movie.
Yeah, and I think it's also got a double meaning there with the kind of the war that is going on inside of Caesar. Of course, Circus, once again, let's get it out of the way early. Circus absolutely knocks it out of the park in this movie. Once again, breathes so much life into this character. You feel for everything that this character is going through, everything that he experiences. And it's just between the just incredible CGI and the incredible performance of Andy Circus, they just continue to develop this character. I would say, like, thinking about like film trilogies and, you know, characters in film trilogies, he's one of the most well-rounded and fleshed out characters who goes on such a huge, think of the journey that he's been on since, you know, his mother died in Rise, and he went to live with James Franco, and, you know, going through everything he went through in that film to Dawn, where there's the tenable peace with the humans that ultimately gets broken, and he has to have the battle with Koba to assert dominance in front of all the other apes. And then you get to this film where Caesar begins. Well, let me step back just a little bit on that. Actually, I don't like the way that this film opens. I actually really, really, really hate the way that this film opens, because it does what a lot of third film in a trilogy type movies end up trying to do. It decides to give text on the screen recapping the events of the first two movies and knock that shit off.
I liked it.
We're here to watch the third movie of a fucking trilogy. We don't need you to recap the first two movies in the trilogy for us. And even if you don't do that, if you just begin with the humans pressing the attack on the apes, you know, where they're, you know, sneaking through the woods and they're trying to find the apes so they can attack them, that opening works perfectly well by itself. So the opening text in the film really, really let me down and immediately took the wind out of my sails. Like, literally the second the film started, I saw the text. I was like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, but you know why they're doing it, though. But you understand that, you know why they're doing that. You know how many people are going into this that probably haven't seen Dawn or Rise?
Which is
fine. It's a major studio thing, you know.
But
for me, I liked irritating. That it was clever that in the quotate or in the text on the screen, they'd highlight Rise and it would stay red and it would stay on the screen. And then with the second quote, it was Dawn would stay on the screen in red and like everything else would fade out. I thought it was clever. I mean, if they're going to do it, I feel like I wasn't shocked that they did it, because, you know, make no mistake, the Apes trilogy so far has been financially successful. It hasn't been like a huge box office juggernaut or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're trying their best to be like, hey, listen, if you haven't seen the other ones, this is what happened to them. Go buy the Blu-ray or go rent it or something, you know. But I get your criticism there. It is kind of a little bit of spoon feeding there. But I mean, the rest of the movie is far from it, in my opinion. So I think it didn't bother me as much.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get to this point at the beginning of this film, and it's a little heavy-handed in the beginning. I feel like they spend a little bit too much time kind of dwelling on the events of Dawn instead of kickstarting the plot of this film. And then, you know, it doesn't take them very long to do that. But unfortunately, like I said, it kind of sputters out of the gate for me. It just sputters a little bit. And then once it finally gets going, once it finally gets moving, when, you know, the Colonel shows up at the ape compound, that scene is amazing, and that's really where the movie kind of launches off into the stratosphere for me. But going back to Serkis, he breathes such life into this character, and I can't remember a character in cinema I couldn't even tell you, like the past however many years, that I've really, really connected to the way that I connect to this character. And like I said, you have to give every single bit of credit for that to Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah.
It's just incredible. He is so good in this movie. I mean, literally, it, all faults aside, and like a lot of my negatives are pretty, you know, minute. They're not anything nitpicks, major with
as
the
we
film.
Like to call them, yeah.
Yeah, there's no major plot flaws with the film, I don't feel, or anything like that. I actually think that there's some really clever stuff that I want to get into, but the evolution of Caesar as a character now, after Dawn, he wanted peace, but unfortunately he's been thrust into a war he didn't want, and he just wants to protect ape kind. And the humans are being aggressive. The humans are trying to attack them, so he's defending them. And then tragedy strikes, and his family is killed by the Colonel. And it's a devastating scene.
Oh, man. I literally, you know, I'll be up front here. I got emotional when I saw Dawn in theaters the two times that I watched it, but never once in that movie did I outright like have tears pouring down my face. And in this film, in War, when we see Caesar's family dead in front of his eyes, and you see the expression, the amazing mocap performance by Andy Serkis when he looks at his family and sees them gunned down, freshly killed by the Colonel, played amazingly by Woody Harrelson, and I'll be getting to him in a little bit here. It's chilling. I couldn't help it, dude. It's just a natural emotion for me. The tears just rolled down my face. I could not help it. You know, we had just seen him reunite with his son, who had just gone out on a journey to go find basically a refuge, a new place for them to live. Because it's obvious at this point that the apes, they're trying to move as far away from where they know humans are as possible so they can just live. They can just coexist. And that's what Caesar's whole idea is. Since we know that in Dawn, he's seen both sides. And yeah, a lot of these apes have witnessed that with him in Dawn. Maurice, among others, you know, they've seen it, that not all humans are bad, and we can try to attempt to coexist with them. And going back to Circus, and I know we're going to keep going back to this, but it would be amazing to see them do some kind of special award or create something for performers like Andy Circus, because the guy is giving a full performance. He's acting. It's not like he's just there on the side. He's doing everything. Yeah. Every bit of the facial recognition, the emotions in the eyes, it's all Andy Circus. Every bit of emotion is Andy Circus.
Every single bit of it.
And even more so in this film than Dawn, he has a lot more speaking, because he speaks a lot more because, you know, obviously Caesar at this point can just fully speak in human tongue naturally now. It's not as much stuttered and sput out as it was in the last two movies. But seriously, I mean, I couldn't believe it, that the work that he put into this, it was just fantastic. But I'm going to throw it back to you, because I'm just going to keep going back and forth about how great Andy Serkis is. Hashtag Oscar for Serkis. I'm telling you right now, though, if this movie does not win Best Visual Effects at the Oscars next year, I will literally go there and I'll riot. This is the best CGI work I've ever seen. You can tell by watching Rise, then watching Dawn, then watching this movie, how far they've come. The detail, the hairs, the expressions on these characters' faces, and every single thing about it, I never once doubted I was watching real, living, breathing creatures.
Well, and to carry it even one step further from that, I mean, when they're in the snow, like the way that the snow sticks to their fur in different spots and, you know, kind of crystallizes. Like, think of when you go out and it's a heavy snowstorm and the snow freezes in your hair. I mean, everything about the film looks so hyper realistic. I mean, they put you right there. They put you in that place, and you really, really feel like you are watching, you know, a chimp who can walk around and talk, and all these other apes who are very intelligent, and everything about it feels so, so natural. It's very, very clear, once again, that all of the mocap actors have definitely done their homework. They go to ape camp, and they've learned, you know, how to move and how to act and how to be like an ape, and then
how to ride a horse as an ape.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the amazing team at Weta Digital that just turns these apes into, or turns these actors, excuse me, into these just super realistic apes. It's so, so perfect. But I have to comment
on that real quick before we jump into something else. Part of the cool thing about me seeing this movie early, I'm not throwing it in your face, maybe a little bit, was that there was a live stream Q&A with the cast and crew that actually aired before the movie started. And one of the things that Matt Reeves said during that Q&A was, you know, he wanted to up the ante, you know, with Weta and what they had done in the second film. In the second film, they had the apes in rain, you know, and they had to see how the water would roll off their hair, their fur. And in this movie, he said, can we do the snow? And Weta said, we don't know. We don't know if we can do it. And he said, well, that's what I want. In this movie, even more so than the others, we see these apes in so many different environments. We see them in the woods, lots of greenery. We see them in a rainy environment. We see them on a beach with a beautiful looking sun behind them. And then we do see them in the snow. For the most part of the film, they are in the snow behind snowy mountains with snow coming down on their fur. Imagine the amount of work and time that Weta took to do that. It's revolutionary work. It is the best CGI work that I've ever seen in a film. I will leave it at that. Man, they literally, hats off to those guys for doing the technical work they did with this. I feel like if any film that comes after this can't even remotely come close to it, it's going to be a disappointment in my eyes. It's really hard to see bad CGI after watching this movie.
Very, very true. But I want to get away from the effects a little bit. And you mentioned the Colonel earlier, as played by Woody Harrelson. And one of the things that immediately sold me on this character as a villain is that this is how you sell a villain to an audience. What does he do literally in the opening act of the fucking movie? He walks right in and kills the protagonist's family. Boom. Just dead. Like, heartlessly, just in cold blood, murders them. And, you know, he's a huge, huge presence. I mean, think about, like, the way that the apes... I love that they kind of mirrored this relationship, too. The way that the apes look up to Caesar as kind of a, you know, a leader and a hero and everything. Think of the way that the soldiers also do the same thing to Harrelson, but for a different reason. A lot of it's driven by fear. Fear of the unknown. And I want to jump into the plot of this movie in just a bit here, but I think Harrelson absolutely knocked it out of the park. Absolutely fantastic in this role. I really, there was one scene, only one scene with him that I wish would have been handled a little bit differently. And it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe a little bit more than halfway through the film when it's basically just a huge exposition dump.
When he's sitting there and he's explaining the whole thing to Caesar.
Exactly. I mean,
yeah,
I get it.
It got to me a little bit too, yeah.
It happens,
I feel like it goes on for a little bit too long. That's my problem with it because they bring up Caesar to kind of have like a quick little convo with him. And then it turns into like almost like a 5 or 6 minute scene where basically the colonel is explaining his whole plan, what's happened, what he's been through.
Again,
you have to have some kind of backstory for him because you want to be able to relate to him. And that's my number one thing walking away from the movie is not only is he bloodthirsty, brutal, and menacing. Oh, my God.
You can definitely relate to him, yeah.
You can relate to him. And he's a real human being. And he has that duality because he's doing what he thinks is right. But at the same time, he's so cold-blooded with his actions. But you can relate. You can understand. That. And it's so great in a movie, Nick, where I can sit down and I can look at the villain and I can look at our hero and I can relate to both of them and understand both of their motivations and still feel something for both of them at the same time, knowing that they're going to clash and only one of them is going to come out victorious.
Yeah, and they do that scene really, really well. It is a very, very long kind of exposition heavy scene.
Yeah.
But they also do this kind of great thing where they kind of slowly build a little bit of tension between the two characters. And then it comes around to the end of that scene where Harrelson looks Caesar dead in the eyes and he's, you know, tells him he's glad he's killed his family and that he'd do it again. And then Caesar just loses his shit, you know, so you immediately have that snap and then boom, the energy of the movie picks right back up. So it was really, really, really well handled. But yeah, Harrelson as the colonel was absolutely fantastic in the film. I can't say anything bad about him. And, you know, Paul had mentioned when we did the Apes retrospective in the main show, when he watched Dawn, you know, that the human characters were kind of a snooze. Like, he kind of wanted to fast forward through the human character moments because they didn't get a lot of meat to chew on. None of the human characters did. And that's even more of the case. And there's kind of a progression of that. Rise is, of course, there's tons of humans in Rise. And then the virus hits. And in Dawn, you get less of them. And in this film, you get even less because it's made a plot point in the film.
Exactly.
Humans are actually devolving into savages. They're devolving into unintelligent,
for lack of a better word,
apes. You know, we're basically devolving as the apes continue to evolve. And I think that that's such a fantastic way to kind of mirror it. And also, let's not forget that this is part of a franchise, you know, and they're kind of want to eventually, I mean, even though it's a very, very loose prequel to the original Charlton Heston film, they're still trying to kind of put us on the path to get back there. And I think that having the virus mutate to where it's now robbing humans of their ability to speak and kind of making them, how primal it makes them is really kind of up for debate because you definitely get great moments of emotion from both Nova and from the Colonel. So how much that actually happens is a little, you know, like I said, it's a little bit up for debate, but I love that they kind of flip that on its head and they have the humans actually devolving. So you don't really get much from the humans this time around outside of just it's desperation. And that's one of the biggest themes of this film spelled out from humanity's point of view, because I mean, literally humanity's losing its very nature, its very soul.
I loved how they did it too. Visually, it's the first thing that would be taken away from us that we would suffer from. Think about those of us on this planet that aren't born with the ability to speak or aren't born with the ability to hear or lose that you know, later on in life after you already know what it's like to speak and hear yourself or be able to hear or be able to see. And that's our communication, man. That's how we deal with each other on this planet, is we speak to each other. And for that to be the first thing that's taken from us is our speech, knowing that we used to be able to speak, and the frustration of looking at somebody else, or, you know, for in the case of Nova, the young little girl who loses her father earlier on in the film due to, you know, basically Caesar not giving a fuck and blowing him away with the shotgun. You know,
that was a great moment.
I loved it. I loved it so much, man. I was like, oh, so awesome. But, you know, and that's going to lead me to one of the things I wasn't necessarily sure that I think the film needed, in my opinion. But I did like the visual, you know, the bloody nose, and then they can't speak and their struggle to speak. And these are obviously human beings that could speak at one point. Yeah. So it makes it even worse on them. But I'm going to throw this at you right now, because I don't know how I felt about it. Now, she was in the posters a little bit. The character of Nova, who's just this little blonde girl, she loses her father. I assume it's her father. They never actually state
I would
that
assume
it's her father,
so, yeah.
But I assume that it's her father that Caesar shoots because he pulls out a gun on them while they're starting on their journey to try to find the colonel. They run into this small little, basically like a cabin where they've been living. And Maurice, who, oh my God, I feel like Maurice is probably my second favorite character of these films outside of Koba. They started to actually give him a lot more of a presence in this movie. You know, he basically says
and Rocket. It was nice to see Rocket get some skin, because he got kind of shoved into the, after Caesar defeats him, you know, in Rise and becomes the alpha of the apes. Rocket really fades into the background, and of course he's in Dawn as well. But I mean, he really doesn't get any moments to shine.
I mean, he loses his son in Dawn, but in this case, you know. There's that whole attachment that we have to have a human character with these apes. Yeah. And I feel like it was a little slightly shoehorned in, like, all right, well, they'll pick up a human on the way, so that way we still have that human element before we get to the military camp while there's humans there. It didn't necessarily work for me all that great. There's a scene in particular where Luca puts a flower into Nova's hair. And then 5 minutes later, he dies.
Yep.
And then she takes the same flower and puts it into his fur. And I'm like, that would have had great emotional weight had that been placed better in the film. It literally happens in like less than a 10-minute time span, which I was like, you know, I feel like she was there for that reason. I still feel like she was a charming character and she was fine. She doesn't speak, which is great, because I would never want like no offense. I mean, I love little girls and everything, but I would not want like a human little girl that could speak with these apes on this journey. It wouldn't have made it work at all. But I don't know if you know what I mean by that. I feel like she was there because they felt that there had to be a human element during that part of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I'll disagree only in the aspect that I think she's kind of a visual representation of the last of Caesar's, and I mean, I don't have a better word for it, so humanity.
His tolerance like, of humanity.
He snaps basically after his family gets murdered, and he goes all Kill Bill on this shit. Like, he's going to find the colonel no matter what, and he's going to murder the goddamn bastard, you know? And I think finding her, you know, and, you know, I really, really feel like she's just kind of a visual representation of, I mean... Whatever's left of the Caesar that was. And I mean, she's also kind of a really good juxtaposition from Rise, because she's exactly the same way that Caesar was. In this film, the apes come and they, you know, obviously he was going to fire at the apes too, so they had to put him down. But, you know, he goes at them and they kill him, and then there's this little child that's left without a family, so he has to be taken in by them. It's exactly what happens to Caesar in Rise. His mother is killed trying to defend him, so he ends up getting adopted by James Franco's character, and that's how he grows up. And I really loved that mirror image. Yeah. They did a lot of that kind of stuff with, especially with Rise, where they would kind of reflect back on some of the stuff that happened in Rise and kind of play off of it really nice with a nice juxtaposition like this. I thought she was great. I really loved the.
Oh, she's great in the film. She's great in it.
Her inclusion in the film.
Okay,
it definitely worked for me. It was. I think it was necessary in terms of Caesar's character evolution to continue.
I can see that. I can definitely relate to that. You know,
I loved the scene, even though you're right, it was very, very brisk, when the gorilla dies, and you know, she then places the flower in his hair. But then that's what I was talking about a little bit before. They tell us in the film, it's one of the major plot points, that the virus robs them of their humanity and makes them basically primal. But you know, crying, that's definitely like emotional intelligence. Like that's huge. And I really, really feel like maybe they're a little bit wrong about it, or maybe it just hasn't affected them enough to the point yet where we don't ever get to see another human in the film aside from the Colonel who is affected in this way. So
yeah, we don't see how far that, you know, they devolve basically. Well,
and even like, think about the soldier that they find. When they find out that the soldier's still alive, you could definitely see in his eyes, like the pleading in his eyes, yeah. like the fear.
Such an emotional scene. I loved yeah. that scene. And that scene is going to lead me to another sequence that brought us to another brand new character, Nick, for the film. And I felt like you may disagree with me, but I loved this new character very much. It leads us to meet Bad Ape, played by Steve Zahn. And I can't tell you enough, I loved that character in this movie. The film is so emotional. At times it can be a little bit dark. It's a little bit bleak. And unlike Dawn.
Wait, a little bit dark?
Well,
they're fucking whipping and torched. Like I said this when I came out of the theater, because there was a whole group of like pre-tweens in the front row in front of us at the theater. And I walked out of the theater after I saw the movie and I was like, they should not have fucking been here. Like,
no, I agree. This
is insanely serious subject matter.
Seriously. And you know, after seeing, you know, Scorsese's Silence, a lot of the same things you see and you feel in that movie, you see in this, but it's being done to apes. But what I'm,
and that's
what
the what only I'm, reason it's PG-13 is because there's CGI apes. I mean,
I know what I meant real, to say
this
was
this film is visceral. It's raw and it's goddamn intense, dude.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that's why I said it was a roller coaster ride, because it is. What I meant to say was for a tentpole blockbuster hitting in the middle of the fucking summer, in the middle of July, it is extremely dark. It's a lot darker than most of the stuff we see.
Let's face it.
This is not the run-of-the-mill action, you know, big blockbuster film. This is more of a dramatic character piece. And yes, there is great action to be had in it. But the thing that I liked a lot about Bad Ape is it brought a different perspective of a different kind of ape that's not part of their group, that's not been with them, to see their part of how they've seen the world. We've seen all these apes interact with each other, but we've never seen an outsider yep. ape. And I think Steve Zahn was extremely charming. I think he came up with probably one of my favorite characters of the entire trilogy, because his voice, his mannerisms, the way he performed as the character. And he was just a cute, funny character.
No.
But it worked. It worked so well in the movie. It didn't feel, you know, ham-fisted in there. Well, and
I'll tell you why it worked, Justin. Because Reeves knew enough not to overdo it. Is Bad Ape like really comedically over the top? Of course he is. And he's a great character. I absolutely agree with you on that aspect, but they don't overdo it. It's not just scene after scene after scene of him overplaying it. Like they kind of, whenever they would bring the film into this really kind of dark, serious imagery, he would kind of pepper it in just a little bit, just a sprinkling, just to lighten the mood a little bit. And I think that was really, really to the film's credit.
One of my favorite scenes.
This easily could have way, way, way overdone this character. And it would have been the Bad Ape show for like the last half of the movie. And it would have turned into cheese. It would have been way over the top. It would have been really hammy. And then it wouldn't have been as effective as it was. I think it was just the perfect amount. He disappears from the film for four long portions of the runtime as they're continuing to move forward with Caesar's journey. And then, like I said, they pepper him in just where he's needed, just to keep the mood slightly above uber bleak.
Yeah. And when we meet him, you know, he's been hiding away at this old ski resort, which they gave an opportunity, Nick, to show one of the most visually stunning scenes in the entire film. When they pan that camera in on that set, all the icicles and the blues and the light blue hues in that room where they're going in to try to find Bad Ape. He's escaped with the binoculars. He grabs the shotgun. He thought they were human. And there's just this shot there. I was like, oh my God, it was just so stunning. I was like, wow. I know it's me just kind of taking a shot in the dark there, but that's the one scene that I was like, wow. I mean, this movie literally
some breathtaking cinematography.
Some
in this
beautiful
film.
Cinematography. Oh my God. And there's that scene where they come in from the outside into the broken glass and then into the inside of that building. Yep. Oh my God. I was just like, wow. But no, Bad Ape, I mean, I think he was charming. I really enjoyed him. And Steve Zahn gave a fantastic performance as the character. It could have totally ruined the film, but it definitely didn't. One of my favorite scenes, and I just had to say this scene, there's the scene where they're digging the hole to try to have the apes escape in the underground, basically where the humans were trying to escape from the quarantine center. And it's the scene, Nick, where Bad Ape just is looking out. He doesn't know any better. He's just a simpleton. He just sticks his head out the hole, and he's just looking around. He looks around, and then Rocket's like, this is the ape I told you about. And then he just still has that same dumb look on his face looking around, you know, and then the other ape comes over to, like, shake his hand or do their little, their ape shake, I like to call it. And it was so charming. I was like, I just love this so much, you know. So that was probably my favorite part of Bad Ape.
All right. Well, I mean, there's only really one other thing that I want to touch on about the film, and that's, of course, the whole, you know, very explosive finale, the entire final action set piece, which, I mean, when I saw the trailers, and of course, you don't know really in the trailers or anything like that, but I really, really enjoyed and appreciated the fact that after all this time, after a virus ravages and destroys most of humanity, and this series has gone a lot on this motif. It was a huge motif in Dawn. It's not necessarily the factions against each other that does them in. It's their mindset that, you know, humans are still at each other's throat, still trying to kill each other off, even after there's been so, so many people decimated by this virus and humanity's just a shadow of what it once was. I thought that was fantastic. I love, the only thing I didn't love about the final battle, I get it, it's just a little bit of Hollywood doing Hollywood, but, you know, it was a little bit Avalanche Ex Machina.
Okay. No, you were talking about the Avalanche. No, because I was, that's one thing that to me was like, it was the icing on the cake, but at the same time, I was like, they're going to go there.
Yeah. Avalanche Ex Machina.
It's their easy way of, yeah.
Their easy way out because, yeah. I mean, you've already had Caesar. I mean, think about all he goes through throughout that entire sequence to free the little child apes and everything like that. And then to rescue everybody, get them all out, get them to safety. And then he goes back for the Colonel and he finds out, of course, that the Colonel has lost his ability to speak because he touched the doll, which was
a great thing to revisit. Oh my God. Love it so much.
So good. And then, you know, he leaves, you have that amazing scene where Monkey, you know, the big gorilla that had joined the human side, which as a plot point,
they introduce him in the beginning of the movie. He's part of the group. They're donkey this, donkey that, and they're grabbing him. You could see what they're doing with these apes that have turned themselves over.
It's kind of an
followers
easy setup
Koba.
For the scene
it
that
is.
Get of him blowing the dude up with the,
it
with
certainly
the rocket
is.
Launcher or whatever.
It is.
Which was, it was a very cathartic scene. It was a very kind of fist pump, like, yeah, that was a great scene. Aside from the Avalanche Ex Machina, that whole action finale was absolutely fantastic. And then you get to the ending. The only thing I won't talk about is the absolute ending of the film. I think it was a perfect way to end this trilogy.
I agree. I agree.
That's the one thing that I don't want to spoil for anybody. But
okay, I can definitely get on board with that.
I just think it was perfect. It completes this character's journey absolutely perfectly. And yeah, there it
is. That's why, for me, this was the perfect conclusion, the befitting conclusion for Caesar, because we've seen this character point A, point B, point C, and we've seen where he's come. And there were a lot of people, Nick, that were complaining on social media that I saw. There were a lot of people out of the GA that were complaining about that title. But they were like, oh, there was no war. They were expecting the poster that I'm looking at right now on my screen is a poster that Fox did for the film, which is Caesar, Maurice, and Luca. And you can see even Bad Ape and a huge army of apes. And then in front of them, you see the army of the humans. And with the title War for the Planet of the Apes, I think a lot of mainstream audience goers were like, oh, this is going to be a huge war movie of apes and humans fighting each other. And spoiler alert, we didn't necessarily get like a huge full out war movie. You being the war movie buff, I was wondering if you had anything to say about that.
No, I mean, it definitely was a war film, but it wasn't a physical war. It was an ideological war, you know, and it wasn't a war on the battlefield. It was a war for, you know, the very survival of both species.
Exactly.
You know, even though just because you don't see like massive armies charging across battlefields doesn't make it not a war. So, yeah, same, fuck those people.
No, I know. I saw a couple of critics that were literally digging as deep as they possibly could to find something to complain about the movie. And I'm like, dude, the trailers never once gave off the idea that this was going to be like a huge war epic with like thousands. And you've seen Dawn, right? You've seen how many apes that they know of that are in their clan.
You know what would have been shitty at the end of this movie?
If they did that?
When that army comes charging in at the end to attack the base, if that was like an army of apes driving tanks and flying helicopters and shit, like you get a shot of an ape in a pilot's helmet in a helicopter, you know, like it would have, like it's same thing with Bad Ape. Like if they would have overdone it, if they would have gone in that direction, it would have taken this thing down a super campy, super over the top, super cheesy kind of road. And that would have made me madder than anything else. Like, I think that this film did exactly what it needed to do. These films have always first and foremost been character dramas. Nothing else. Exactly. They have great action set 100%. Pieces in them. They have a lot of great elements to them, but they're still character dramas at the end of the day. So that'll wrap up my thoughts on everything. I don't have anything else to add to it, but yeah, I mean, definitely a recommendation. It is an amazing, amazing ending to this trilogy. I mean, again, as I've said many times, Dawn is a modern day masterpiece. This isn't quite there, but this is just as good as Rise was. And I also really loved Rise. So you're not going to check into this thing and walk out of it really, really disappointed. Every character kind of goes exactly where you would expect them to. And I mean, in terms of what comes next, Justin, leave it alone.
I can agree.
I think that rag has been wrung dry. I don't think you can get much more mileage out of, you know, humans fighting apes on film, you know, I mean, because that's basically the direction they would probably take it in. It's like, oh, well, now we have to have like a huge all-out battle.
No, they're going to bring Mark Wahlberg back. They're going to bring Wahlberg back and do a sequel to Tim Burton's remake.
Jesus Christ.
But no,
no.
So I absolutely loved this movie. It is still not necessarily on par with Dawn, as I said earlier on in the review, but I would, since I'd give Dawn a 9 out of 10 rating, I did give War for the Planet of the Apes an 8 out of 10 rating, close to 9, but after I saw it twice, I loved it. It's still, as of right now, Nick, I'm just going to make this statement on the show, it's still my favorite film of the year up until this point, as of right now. We still have plenty of films to see before the end of the year, so we'll see what happens. But for me, I was totally satisfied. My emotional feelings towards the movie were drawn out, and
The frustrating thing about this is, Justin, is that we did that, you know, top movies of the year so far right before July hit, and we both talked about it on that episode where we kind of knew that a lot of movies were going to come along that we're going to end up bumping a lot of those movies off of that list. And I mean, yeah, that definitely happens for me with War as well. I think I would seed it. God, it's tough for me.
If you had to,
Logan, but for number two. I mean, Baby Driver would still be number one for me. This would either be at number two or number three, either right before or right after Logan. It's just kind of,
you know, I got to be honest though,
I don't ball up in the air, but I don't know where it lands. So either way, it's on the top five.
I don't think Baby Driver will ever leave my number five or out of my top five. I don't think Baby Driver will ever leave my top five for the year.
That movie's on my best of the year list.
We'll see what happens. Like I said, we still got a lot of movies to see for the rest of the year. And that makes me excited. You know what, Nick? Because we're still a little bit more over than halfway through the year. But
yeah,
seeing a movie this good during the middle of the summer season is a blessing.
It kind of revitalized a summer for me that at least up until the end of June was very, very lackluster.
Oh, he still didn't see Spider-Man Homecoming. He won't actually accept that it's a pretty good movie.
That was also a July release, though. So
but But this movie actually took away the box office for Spider-Man Homecoming, and it gave Marvel their second biggest second weekend drop of all time for any of their movies. So War definitely is hitting a mark there. Now, unfortunately, it's not doing nearly as good as Dawn did. It's doing about Rise yeah, numbers. It's
way less than fucking Dawn was, yeah.
So, I mean, I think this movie
will have legs, though. I think it'll definitely make its budget back. I don't think it's definitely not going to be a bomb of any kind.
Oh, no, definitely.
I think it'll definitely pull respectable numbers because it'll have legs. I mean, Wonder Woman is still, you know, hauling it in.
And I'm happy about that.
But mostly out of regular circulation at this point.
But I got to say this much. I loved Wonder Woman, but I'm going to say this much right now, Nick. Apes together, strong. And I hope this movie does well. Seriously, though, I absolutely really, really enjoyed this movie. It's a great movie. It's the perfect movie to see during the middle of the summer, Nick, when you're just kind of like, I got to step away from, you know, the regular blockbuster fare. For one movie and just watch something a little bit more dramatic, a little bit more character oriented and watch it.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the guy that's going to make the next Batman movie. So go see this movie, see what he's got up his sleeve and enjoy this great character piece for Caesar. So that's it, Nick. That is our minisode for War for the Planet of the Apes. I'm very glad that we both, for the most part, agreed on the film. And that you didn't hate it because, you know, once in a while you surprise me, you shock the hell out of me. I feel like I'm being electrocuted and you're like, I fucking hated it. And you didn't.
This movie would have had to do a lot of things for me to, I mean, my expectations were already so high coming in from Dawn. I mean, this thing would have, like, it basically would have had to kind of do like a straight up remake of like one of the cheesy, shitty Planet of the Apes sequels.
Conquest?
Yeah. Well, as we talked about in the retrospective, Rise and Dawn are already very loose, almost remakes of, you know, Conquest and Battle. But even still, this film would have had to go so over the top. Like, it would have had to be like the Batman and Robin of the Apes franchise for me to have walked out of it and been like, fuck everything about this movie.
When they have apes dancing in ape suits.
Why didn't they do that? Instead of Steve Zahn, they could have got Schwarzenegger to play Bad Ape, and he could have been walking around just... He lived in a ski lodge in the snow. He could have been dropping ice puns literally the whole time. Huge, huge, huge miss window, Matt Reeves. What the hell were you thinking?
That would have been amazing. Seriously. Arnold is an ape.
All right. Well, yeah, everybody out there, thank you very, very much for listening. We absolutely love you guys. So until next time, I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
And I am Epic Film Guy Justin. And we will see you at the movies.
This has been a production of the Podfix Network. For more great content like this, get your fix at podfixnetwork.com.